In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Located in Central Florida, Reformation Bible College seeks to equip students in the knowledge of God and His holiness, that they may glorify and enjoy Him in any career they enter. The founder of RBC, Dr. R.C. Sproul, carefully designed the curriculum to provide students with a classical education that is distinctly Reformed. In addition to receiving a firm theological foundation in the Reformed tradition, students have the opportunity to grow as they know, serve, and worship the Lord together in community with like-minded believers. Whether attending a weekly chapel service, catching up with a neighbor in the on-campus residence hall, or meeting with a professor at the cafe, an RBC education provides students with plenty of opportunities to take the biblical truth learned in the classroom and put it into daily practice. Incoming students can win a full tuition scholarship for their first year of on-campus studies through RBC's annual essay contest. This year, students are invited to submit essays on themes related to the Apostles' Creed. Entries must be received by March 1st, 2024. So start writing today and enter to win at reformationbiblecollege.org/essay. If you'd like more information about RBC, visit reformationbiblecollege.org or send an email to admissions@reformationcollege.org. Hello, and welcome to Dwell, the Searcy Institute podcast for homeschool moms by homeschool moms. I am your host, Karen Curran, and I'm here today with my co-host, Renee Mathis. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Karen. It's good to see you.
To see you. And we are here again with Valerie Abraham. If you listened to our previous podcast, you will have heard us chat with her about her new life out there in Idaho, where she lives with her husband, Matthew, and her three boys, having just moved there a year ago from North Carolina, where she was practically neighbors with us. And now she is homesteading, taking care of her boys and all of her animals. And we talked about all the challenges in front of that and doing it all while living in a trailer, an RV, because you are remodeling your home. So that was a really fun conversation. It was good to see you as we get to see each other when we're talking and to hear your story. And then when we signed back on to do this episode, I overheard you and Renee just now talking about cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just jump right in here where we left off our little conversation about your cheese importing business.
Well, thank you for having me back. So yes, Renee and I were just discussing one of our more out-of-the-box unexpected endeavors over the last year after moving out here, getting animals and things like that, and then also my husband working on a new business. we discovered that it was very hard to get good cheese out here. A long time ago growing up, there had been a little cheese shop, but they closed, I forget how many years ago. So our options were very limited. And when we lived in Charlotte, there was a cheese shop in downtown Charlotte that we just loved going to. And we really missed them and the way that they were passionate about cheese and could help, you know, guide you to the right cheese and also just get cheeses that aren't usually accessible in American supermarkets. So we talked to them and they were really kind and helpful, put us in touch with the right people. And we found out that by becoming a wholesaler and distributor, we could both get better cheeses for ourselves and help our friends around us get better cheeses. So we opened a little side business called Sabbath Store, because part of our long-term goal with this is to cultivate the idea of what Sabbath means and what feasting through Sabbath means. So help people enjoy good food more, enjoy good French food more. I think I may have forgotten to mention my dad is French and my mom's American. So I grew up with a lot of very good French cheese, hence why it was particularly near and dear to my heart to make that more accessible to at least this little corner of America.
So what is your favorite cheese?
Oh, do I have to pick a favorite child too?
Okay, no, just pick one. How about this? What is one cheese that you think those of us who are not familiar would do well to learn to appreciate? Maybe one that you would recommend we...
Oh, well, in that case, probably, honestly, just about anything within the entire family of goat cheeses. Because one thing I found out when moving to the U.S. is that in America, usually goat cheese just means one thing. It's that, you know, super sealed log that you get at Publix or whatever that has a pleasant taste, but it does tend to be a little one-dimensional. It's almost like a, you know, cream cheese texture, and it's a great starting point, but it's just like that's one very small facet of the goat cheese world. And in France, goat cheese alone is just this incredibly broad world of all different kinds, from soft young cheeses that a little bit more like American goat cheese to all different kinds of very ripened, very, very aged goat cheeses. Classic one would be a crottin, which refers to the shape.
Oh, you know that.
C-R-O-T-T-I-N.
And
that one, there's a number of different varieties of it, depending on the region, what the cheese-making traditions are, what kind of goats they're working with, what kind of terroir, you know, what kind of soils and grasses are involved in what the goats are eating. And that one ages, so it starts out soft with a slightly wrinkly rind, gets very, very, very mature, hardens so that you almost have to chip away at it eventually, changes color, gets a lot of new colors that can be a little intimidating your first time because, you know, we often tend to think in Western society of mold as a bad thing, but not all molds are created equal. And the molds that are inside cheese are, it's surprisingly hard actually to mess them up. They really, if you get a good sort of ecosystem going with your cheese, those good molds will really just do their job. So it gets a little fuzzy. Most people do prefer to scrape off the actual fuzzy stuff and just eat what's underneath. And the flavors, though, just keep developing and keep changing as the cheese ages. So I consider myself fairly American in that I don't like it too aged. I don't like having to scrape the visible mold off. I'm not a huge fan of things moving on my cheese. Although my French grandmother has been known to eat the cheese when it is literally moving. And she knew it was moving. She told us that was part of the charm and ate it. So I prefer a little bit more Americanized.
So is this something, Valerie, that I could, I'm in a cheese impoverished location as well, but I do have a Whole Foods an hour and a half away. Yeah. Would Whole Foods, something like that, kind of a store, probably sell at least some kind of goat cheese?
They might. They would certainly have more variety than most more readily accessible grocery stores. I'm trying to think what we don't have a Whole Foods near us anymore. We used to. Trying to think what we used to find there.
Another Karen has Trader Joe's, so we can both be jealous.
I love my Trader Joe's cheese.
Trader Joe's has a good selection.
But I'm sure that, you know, straight from France is much superior.
I'm sure.
Another one, actually, that I just thought of that you might be able to find at a Whole Foods would be Mimolette. It's a bright, bright orange cheese. If I tell you about it, it's going to sound less appetizing. It's a sort of cheese you have to just trust the cheesemakers and enjoy it. But basically, part of what gives it complexity and develops the rind and a little bit of the interior is the presence of mites, what are called cheese mites. And they, as the cheese ages, burrow in and give some extra flavor. And then they don't get in past a little bit of the rind. So you're not actually eating the mites when you eat the cheese, unless you eat the rind, which is too hard to eat anyway. It's kind of like a Parmesan rind. But it has a very sharp, kind of almost like an Irish cheddar flavor. And it's a very, very fun cheese to eat. It would go well with apples, things like that. And I think you might be able to find that at some national chains like Whole Foods.
Can you spell that one?
That is Mimolette.
Okay.
They've made it through U.S. Customs, which means that there can't be anything that's too terrifying in it, because Customs has even tried to ban Roquefort at one time, which was a travesty, but...
Why? What would there be in Roquefort that they would want to...
I believe it was that... trying to remember which... It was either that it was... raw, and so in America that is part of the complexity. We can't get cheese that is raw milk and aged less than 60 days. If it's raw, it has to be aged more than 60, which actually rules out a lot of the really, really good French cheeses. So that's a little secret sorrow for us to bear until the FDA loosens up a little and comes to terms with the beauty of the bacterial world.
Oh, they ever will. So what cheeses do you import? So you have your little micro business,
yes,
cheese importing. What are some of your kinds? And let's just say somebody wants to find out more. How do they find out what you're importing and how to get it?
It's our website is very rough still. It's a very, very micro business. But we try whenever we order cheese. So we've been slowing down during the summer, partly because of things like having a house renovation going on and a baby on the way, taking up a little bit of time. But we're planning to get more stock in for Thanksgiving and Christmas, for all those festive occasions. And it really changes a lot. So there's certain cheeses that we order pretty regularly because they're just the great classics of French and Swiss. We do get some Swiss cheeses as well. So Gruyère would be one of those, which is one that you can find in the US, but we have a particular producer that we like to seek out who actually left the Gruyère appellation in the 1930s. So long before any of this, you know, more modern culture of going back to food roots. In the 1930s, they saw that Gruyere was already becoming a highly industrialized, standardized cheese. And they said, no, we want to preserve the ancestral customs of how we make this. And so they named their new kind of split off appellation Litivaz after one of the villages in Switzerland where it's made. And I think some of the things, for example, making that involve the cows have to be grazing at, I forget what altitude, but basically high altitude before they can start using the milk to make the cheese so that they're actually getting the true alpine flavor, not the lower altitude grasses that change the flavor. So high altitude grazing on grass and wildflowers, natural fauna of flora. And then they use open fire copper cauldrons to make the cheese when they're going through the slight heating process before they press it. And then there's probably aging requirements as well. I can't remember those, but you can even occasionally find a little fleck of ash in your cheese when you're buying Itivaz because it's still made, you know, it's not made in a factory. It's still made over these huge open fires with copper cauldrons. So it's a lot more small family farms that produce it, all over this particular area of Switzerland.
So what's your website?
It is I believe, sabbathstore.com.
Okay.
It should just be that. Second guessing suddenly.
but if it looks a little sketchy,
if it looks a little sketchy,
you're probably looking at a Black Sabbath fan site.
Don't go there. Good to know. I should make sure and people don't mistype that then.
Sabbathstore.com. So how many cheeses do you try to have available at a time?
It does depend.
It might be kind of an expensive endeavor for you to ship this stuff over, right?
Right. It's not the most profitable endeavor always. It's a very fun endeavor because it's a cause we can really get behind. let's see. I'm trying to think. Maybe up to about 8 at a time. Another thing we do specifically for winter is get in multiple different raclette cheeses. So raclette, if you're familiar with that, is a Swiss. They make it a little bit in France, but it's primarily in Switzerland. And another, you know, pretty high alpine pastures, usually semi-hard cheese that is traditionally served melted, which is actually where the name comes from. Raclette means to scrape in French. So raclette is the scraped cheese. So you melt, the old school way of doing it is to have an open fire, open hearth, have the cheese mounted on a spit basically, or a wheel, and then hold it up to the fire. As it starts to melt, you scrape it over potatoes or over bread, serve it with dry cured meats, the little French cornichon pickles or pickled onions, things like that.
And yeah, we've enjoyed that at your house.
Yes.
We did it over the flame, but we had your...
On the little, right. So the more modern version of the griddle.
Lovely.
But yeah, it's a wonderfully festive cheese and is very often served either if you're high enough in the mountains for it to get cold, or at Christmas in the rest of Switzerland and France, and I think Germany as well. So we try to get a few different versions for people to compare from different... producers.
Mallory, it's so obvious listening to you that you have such a passion for not only, you know, good food and served in a beautiful setting, but in enjoying the feasting aspect with other, you know, family and friends. And in fact, that's one of the ways I got to know you, was you invited me to your home for dinner. And you mentioned your dad is literally a French chef. He's from France. He's a native and he was trained classically. Mm-hmm. And I believe he opened a restaurant when y'all moved to the United States. So tell us a little bit about growing up in that kind of environment, and how did that help you learn to cook and to be hospitable, and how have you taken that forward into your own home?
So yeah, we moved here to the US in 2005 and started a restaurant the next year, which was not something any of us had anticipated my dad doing after he took a year of sabbatical, because he was a full-time pastor and church planter before that. But we started a restaurant called West of Paris. I think every single family member at some point ended up working there. I started when I was 13 as a dishwasher, and then eventually worked with my dad as an apprentice as well, which is the common model in France, is to work as an apprentice under a chef. That was how he was trained. And then worked front-end as well, some serving. My brothers were both servers there. And I think the thing that was the most memorable about it is that for my parents, this really was a form of hospitality, not just a way to put bread on our own table at home. You know, truly everyone who walked in that door was not just a body to be fed, but a soul to be fed. I mean, I can still remember my dad basically having pastoral counseling sessions with some of the clients who came in. Like, he would just sit down with them and they would just start talking, because you get good food, you get good French wine, and you get someone who actually loves you as a person, and you just start talking. And yeah, they still have lifelong relationships from some of the people that they met there and got to serve food to, that they still know today. And it really was a very unique dynamic. And I think people sensed that when they came in.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how do you, I know that you're very hospitable, and it's probably hindered a little bit by living in a trailer. You can't really have another family over for dinner and sit around your little table,
right?
But you still are hospitable to your family and your friends from church. So how does that look a little different?
I think the biggest shift is just learning to lean into it and to see it as a challenge instead of just a flat obstacle, like, okay, well, we can't do that anymore. Because I think initially for a while, I was kind of like, oh, well, that's just off the table. And then I realized, no, there are still ways if I push, if I think outside the box that we can do this, even if it looks a little different than it used to. So we had friends visiting actually earlier this week, and we realized, you know, we can't really do a full meal in the RV, but we can start out here, have some appetizers and a glass of wine, and still be able to bring them kind of into our lives instead of just meeting in a neutral third party space. And so then after we had the appetizer, we ended up going to a restaurant, finishing up there so we could actually have a full meal with them, but we still got to share that part of our lives with them. It just takes learning to rethink, I think, the why you do hospitality too, because it's easy to get caught up in hospitality is, you know, a dining room or having enough chairs for everyone or being able to put this many dishes on the table. And instead of remembering that ultimately it's about breaking bread with people and, like my parents did in a restaurant setting, you know, loving them as eternal souls with the means of food, whatever that looks like, whether it's an 8-course French dinner or whether it's just a few appetizers very simply served in a little bitty RV dinette table.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have a gift for that. We've, you know, been on the receiving end, and I really appreciate that.
Well, we are looking forward to having a house that we can hopefully host all of you in soon.
What are some resources that you would recommend for someone that, like, oh, I don't know how to cook, or I don't know if I can do this? How do you start small with what you have? Do you have a favorite cookbook or a website or
something? Oh, that's a good question. I think a lot of it has to do with getting over yourself, which I've had to do a lot of in the last year, especially with limitations of things like pregnancy, low energy, morning sickness. It's very easy to get caught up in what you would like to be doing. And that might not be a bad goal to be shooting for down the road. You know, down the road, I would like to be able to cook a lot more efficiently. Right now, I'm still the world's most inefficient cook. I'm not like my dad in that respect. And I had to go through a little bit of a disenchantment period when I got married, because I had grown up eating so much amazing food. So I knew what really good food ought to taste like. I knew what my dad's food tasted like, and I thought I could cook that because I had helped him so much. But I discovered it's a very different thing when you're actually running your own household and also being the chief person in charge of the hospitality, and that things don't always turn out like you think they will in that kind of setting. So it was a very humbling experience. And Matthew was a very, very patient guinea pig, even if he did almost have to use a saw to cut through a pork chop once that I served him. but just getting out there and doing it and knowing that it's okay to be in a place now that might not be, you know, where you dream of being in 10 years with a lot more experience under your belt. But that, is it Chesterton who said, anything worth doing is worth doing badly? And learning to just really lean into that. And it can be messy. There are different, you know, right now we're in a season, even when we do have a house with this many kids, staying on top of a perfect house is just not going to happen. So I've had to learn to not let the barrier of wanting a perfect house to host people in a very pristine state get in the way of just sharing some of our lives with people, and letting them come into the mess in a way that I've started to learn can sometimes even make them feel more comfortable, because they don't feel like they're stepping into a museum piece. They feel like they're just part of your lives and that you're not standing on all these ceremonies with them. And I think on a practical level, there's a great book actually by someone who lives like 15 minutes from where we used to live in North Carolina. If I'm pronouncing your name right, Michaelyn Smith.
Yes. We talked about her on a previous podcast.
But she has a fantastic book. It's kind of more about house decorating and interior design in one part, but really delves into the attitude behind hospitality as well. And how you can let things get in the way, or you can just accept where you are at that stage and still be hospitable, welcome people into your home. And then on the cooking side, I think it's partly a matter of just trying a lot of things, because everyone's going to have a very different cooking style and different flavor preferences even. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of French and a lot of Middle Eastern because my husband's half Egyptian. So for the Middle Eastern side of things, anything by Yotam Ottolenghi is just fantastic. They're fairly approachable recipes and really creative flavor combinations with that kind of Mediterranean and Middle Eastern twist.
Do you know how to spell his name? I'm like right off the top of your head.
I believe it's Y-O-T-A-M for the first name. And then Ottolenghi is O-T-T-O-L-E-N-G-H-I.
Okay.
And then also for a lot of takes on classics that are a little bit just simpler than the classics often are written down, Smitten Kitchen is a great resource. So she has
one cookbook you told me about. I think it was after you hosted the gathering, the Cersei gathering at your house. Simple Cake.
Yes.
Right, Odette Williams. Yes. Simple Cake. She has some wonderfully simple recipes in there, and her basic chocolate cake. I have used that so many times. It is simple. You don't even need to frost it. You can make a really simple whipped cream to go on top. You can make a caramel sauce. You can put ice cream on it. You can turn it into a tres leches cake.
Right.
And that's Simple Cake, Odette Williams.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. Simple Cake, Odette Williams.
Yeah. Right. So her premise is kind of
we need
10 cakes recipes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're very approachable. And again, like that kind of streamlined approach. What do you actually need? Because a lot of cookbooks are written like, actually, I feel like I'm speaking heresy saying this. Julia Child is a great example of a very complicated cookbook. It's the very perfectionist approach. And I love Julia Child, but it is very detail-oriented, very labor-intensive. And something like Simple Cake or Smitten Kitchen looks at a lot of those same ideas, same concepts, and says, okay, how can we actually make this doable for a normal person with kids to actually get good food on the table for guests? So, yes. Also, actually, another resource that I have more recently stumbled on is a podcast called, I am blanking on the name. Is it What's for Dinner?
Come Over for Dinner?
Come Over for Dinner. Thank you. Yes, that is a great resource. It's basically, it was a mom in our community. I don't know if I've met her maybe once or something, but she goes to my church and just recently, she moved from the South to the Northwest, and I'm not sure if it was maybe kind of the inspiration of seeing these two cultures come together that inspired her, but she started a podcast on dinner hospitality in particular, and just interviewing moms. So interviewing all these women who, and sometimes men too, in fact, I think she interviewed my dad, but just, you know, how do you do it? What are your tips? And so learning from fellow women, not from someone on TV, not just from internet influencers, even though I love some of their recipes too, but, you know, learning from fellow Christian moms who really have a heart for hospitality and for what.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hospitality represents not entertaining in the sense of showing off, but just truly loving people by having them into your home.
I fully expect you to be a guest on her show any day. That's right up your alley. Yeah, that's a great resource. That's a lot of fun. Well, Valerie, it's been so good to talk to you again and just to hear some more insights from you. And I mean, I can say as one who has sat around your table and actually missed an airplane flight because we were having so much fun at dinner. So I actually had to spend an extra night in Charlotte because I missed my flight. But you and Matthew truly do have a way of loving and serving your guests and friends and making us feel just right at home around your table. And I look forward to seeing what the Lord's going to do as you grow and expand and get into your newer, bigger house and see what's going to happen. But thank you for modeling that joy and gratitude for us and reminding us that our circumstances are not the most important thing. It's our heart and our desire to serve. So thank you for being with us, and here's to home.
Thank you. And you all need to come up to Idaho to have some French cheese and wine, whether it's in an RV or in a new house.
I'm there.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.
Right. Thank you all.
Bye. Good to see you.